Okay. So, great. So here we all are. We'll go around and do introductions. I'm Laura Kahn. I chair the Environmental Advisory Council. And this is, you can see Meg Harvey. She's a State Department of Health epidemiologist who's our special guest tonight. And we'll just go around. We'll do Kathy first.
Hi, I'm Kathy Fay, and I'm the Secretary of the Environmental Advisory Council.
Iris?
Iris Kaminsky. I am a alternate board member for this committee and I for this council, and I am a water expert.
Florestine, introduce yourself.
Florestine Taylor, advisory board member.
Kristen.
In renewable energy, that's my main thing, in job creation.
Great. Kristen?
Hi, this is Kristen Gordon. I'm a member of the advisory council.
And Dawn?
Hi, Dawn Henning, work for the City Engineering Department, and I help staff the council.
Pierre?
Hey everyone, I'm Pierre Barber. I'm the Executive Director of the New Haven Solid Waste and Recycling Authority.
Jeannie?
Hi, I'm Jeannie Dubino. I'm a concerned citizen, also a neighbor of Laura's, and we've worked together on lawn care, supposed lawn care chemicals and other issues.
Sal, I didn't see you there. Hi, Sal.
Alder Sal DiCola, representative from the Board of Alders.
Let's see. Who else is here? Doug Housladen.
Hi, Doug Housladen, Transportation, Traffic, and Parking, City of New Haven.
Melissa Mostowy.
Hi, I'm Melissa Mostaway, and I'm the Natural Resource Specialist with the Southwest Conservation District.
Great. Debbie Elkin. Debbie?
You're muted.
Muted.
Sorry. I am an interested Westville resident and, longtime New Haven resident.
Great. Karen?
Yeah, Aaron Good, Worcester Square resident, Ward 8, New Haven Bioregional Group, and Greater New Haven Green Fund.
Karen?
Yes, I'm Karen Schnitzer. I live in Cheshire. I was invited by Elsa Lohman. I was a board member of the Cheshire Land Trust, vice president for a couple of years. I'm with the Coalition for Sustainable Cheshire, and I think we might be able to learn some things from you folks.
Good, thanks. Mary? Oops. Well, it's Mary Pasty's with us. She, are you there? Can you hear us? We can hear clicking, Mary. Is that you? Okay. Well, you can try again when you're ready because we can't hear anything. Soshi?
I am Sochi, and I
Sochi.
am from, yeah, you can hear me? Okay, yeah, hi. I'm from Gather New Haven, and I also work at New Haven Academy.
Great. Okay, and Lynn.
I'm Lynn. I live in New Haven. I'm a New Haven resident, part of the New Haven Bioregional Group.
Great. Okay. I think, did I miss anybody? I don't think so. Okay. And Meg Harvey, why don't you did I get you, Owen?
Yeah, hi, I'm Owen. I'm just here as a reporter with the Yale Daily News.
Okay. And now we'll go to Meg, our special guest. Tell us everything about you.
Hi, everybody. I am glad to be here tonight. Thanks for inviting me, Laura. I work for the State Department of Public Health in Hartford, although sadly, I haven't been in the building for almost a year. But hopefully that will change soon. I work in the a unit called the Environmental and Occupational Health Assessment Program. That's a bit of a mouthful and not that meaningful or descriptive. So we have a nickname, we call ourselves the Toxic Hazards Unit. So what my group does really is we provide information, scientific expertise, technical assistance, education and outreach on toxins in the environment and what they mean for human health, or what they may mean for human health, or what we know at this point in time about what they mean for human health. So we provide this assistance to local health departments, to community groups, to other agencies like the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, who we work closely with. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. I don't have any regulations that I am in charge of. We're just sort of scientific subject matter experts on toxins in the environment.
Okay, then you're the right person for us. Thank you for being here. So I know I sent out an agenda with some coming events, and one of the dates has changed. The Mill River Watershed Urban Waters Initiative meeting has been changed to March 16th at 6 p.m. And if anybody needs the information on this stuff, I am not very good at copying stuff into the chat box, but I will try. Let's see. We have just a couple of things that we will go through briefly before we get to the presentation about pesticides. So we got an English station update from United Illuminating, and I emailed it to all the members of the Environmental Advisory Council, and I can share it with anybody else who wants it, but they sent us a link to a website, and we had some people asking them some questions, so we're waiting for some answers. I see we've been joined by John Demodica and Dan Derrico. Sorry, I'm having trouble seeing. Anyway, if you two gents would like to introduce yourself, John first and Dan second, that's fine with us.
Sure. Hi, I'm John Demodica. I'm an account executive with Noresco. We're an energy services company and infrastructure redeveloper. Peering in tonight to see what you guys have been up to. I'm sorry that I'm multitasking, and that's why I was off the screen, but thank you for letting me introduce myself. Nice to see you all.
You too. Dan? Dan? Oh, and now we've been joined by Anstris Barwell. Anstris, do you want to introduce yourself? Okay. Anstris? Dan?
I didn't unmute. This is Anstris Farwell, and I work with the New Haven Urban Design League.
Great. Okay. Dan, if you want to introduce yourself, that's fine. If not, that's fine. And if anybody else joins us, that's okay. But I think we'll leave more introductions till later. Anyway, I'm going to try and put the website for the UI English station update in the chat box. And I can get the questions to everybody later, but I'm hoping that we will get more answers from UI because they haven't held a meeting with us in almost a year and a half. And it would be really good to have a meeting with them sometime. And also I approached PSEG at the request of Lynn Bonnet, and they claim they are getting out of the business of selling energy, but they're happy to come. Kathleen Donovan, the contact, is happy to come and talk to us at our next meeting in spite of that. So they've put their New Haven facility out to bid to sell it. So Lynn, you can let me know if you just want questions answered or if you want them to show up, it's entirely up to you.
I assembled some questions and I sent it out to all the folks that were involved in the community benefit agreement with PSEG. when they built their peaking power plants for feedback, and I honestly did not receive any feedback. So basically, I'm interested in knowing what the implications for our community will be if PSEG sells the plant, and what their role is with the Crestdown cable. And I believe that they also distribute power on Long Island. They've stated in previous interviews that they want to generate energy from renewables. They don't want to be generating from fossil fuels anymore. So if that's so, I assembled some questions asking a lot of things, and I will forward them to you, Laura.
Would you prefer that we discuss this at our April meeting, or would you just want your questions answered in writing?
I think it would be helpful if they appeared by Zoom.
Okay. All right, so this is what we're going to do about April. Since we have the English station, which is also an energy issue, and the PSEG issue, we will invite UI to send somebody. We will ask Kathleen Donovan from PSEG if she will come, and we will try and get everybody's questions answered. I make no promises, but we can try. Anyway, I think we're going to skip everything else and go straight.
Can I just quick ask? So I was going to send a letter to Pura, and then we were holding off because we heard that they were about to respond to us. Should I continue to hold off, or should I go ahead and write a letter to Pura?
You should continue to hold off because they did respond. I sent you an email earlier with all the stuff they sent us so far. Mm-hmm. So I think they have been a little bit responsive. Those people who know about this issue can tell us what they think about it.
Well, I'm just looking at it. Some of the questions they didn't really respond to. They just made like kind of placeholder responses that don't have any information in it.
Okay. Well, that's why I suggest that we get them to try and come next month, and we'll discuss energy issues next month. Is that okay with everybody? Since we're meeting in April anyway. So I noticed Karen put a note in the chat box. She often finds more about what's going on in the environment in the business section of the New York Times than the science section. Very interesting. And Iris Kaminsky sent a link to the Financing Sustainable Water 2-day virtual conference workshop, where you can find out about water rates, which is one of Iris's favorite topics, we know. And if anybody else wants to go to this and learn about why water costs what it does, and well, Iris believes that it should cost more, that we're getting off easy. Anyway, you can join that meeting, and there's a link in the chat to the workshop, which is open to the public, but you do have to register. Okay, and now we will go straight to Meg, who will tell us everything we need to know about lawn chemicals and how to avoid them and everything.
Well, I don't know if it'll be everything, because that would be a week-long course, I think.
Uh-oh.
So I'm going to do my best in about 10 minutes.
Well, take your time.
So I can share my screen, or is that easier to, or because I know I shared the presentation with you, Laura. I can, if share screen is permitted with how you've got this set up, I can just try to share my screen.
Totally up to you.
Okay.
If it's easier for you to share your slides.
Let me just try it. Click on share and see what happens. So it looks to me like my slide is, let's see, there may be a delay here. Yeah, there we go. So I am seeing a title slide with some pretty pictures of lawn and garden. All right, awesome. So that's me. I already did my introduction, so I can move past this. So I wanted to spend just a couple of seconds on a little bit of terminology, because we frequently, and I include myself in this, toss around pesticide, herbicide, without thinking, is what does it really mean? So pesticide is actually a term that encompasses a lot of different groups of chemicals that are all, your goal is you're trying to kill something that's undesirable or inactivate something that's undesirable. So herbicide is actually a category of a pesticide that, as we all know, we're trying to kill some kind of undesirable weed or plant. Fungicide, we're trying to inactivate or kill fungus, insecticide, insects, rodenticide, rodents, you get the picture. I included antimicrobials and disinfectants because I think not a lot of people know that they're technically pesticides and they're regulated as pesticides. So a lot of the things that disinfectants, bleach, other chemicals that you might have in your home to use, that you might use to kill microbes, are actually pesticides. Fertilizer is outside the big circle because while it's a lawn and garden chemical, it is not included in the pesticide category. So exposure is really, really important to talk about and understand whenever we're thinking about chemicals or toxins in the environment. Because if you don't have exposure, if you don't have a way for that chemical to get into your body, then you don't have exposure and you don't have to really worry about a harmful health effect. So with lawn and garden chemicals, we're thinking about exposure to the environment. We're also thinking about exposure to people. And so the picture there on the left is technically called the pesticide cycle, but what it's really showing is that when we put lawn and garden chemicals on our lawns and our gardens, they don't necessarily stay put where we put them. The rain can cause chemicals to leach into the soil. And depending on whether there may be groundwater in deep down that can also get contaminated by the pesticides. And if people are drinking the groundwater, then they can get exposed that way. The rain can also cause runoff of chemicals that have been applied to lawns and gardens. And that runoff can go into storm drains, which then can lead into your streams, your lakes, your rivers, Long Island Sound, which, you know, near and dear to you guys living right on it, harming aquatic life. Groundwater also communicates often with surface water. So groundwater can discharge into lakes and streams and even larger bodies of water. Some lawn and garden chemicals are volatile enough, they like to evaporate enough into the air that they can actually just vaporize right off a lawn and get into the air and then actually circle back and come back to the environment via rainfall. So moving sort of to the little diagram more on the right, this is meant to sort of illustrate how exposure can happen to people. So we already know that what you put in your lawn and garden doesn't necessarily stay there. So the chemicals can get into the air, soil, drinking water, food. And we talk about exposure routes, and that is the way that a chemical in the environment can actually get into your body. So some of the things we think about when we're thinking about pesticides or lawn and garden chemicals in general. So ingestion is when the obvious, eating something that might have pesticide residue on it. that's the way the pesticide can get into your body. But also just putting fingers and toys into the mouth can get pesticides into your body as well, if you're working in a garden or touching an area where pesticides have been applied. In addition, we know that studies have shown that lawns that use pesticides can have up to 10 times higher pesticide residues inside the home in the dust. And there's a direct correlation between pesticides used on a lawn and what you find in the house. And that happens because pets might track residues in. You might get residues in the air wafting in through the windows. You might get soil, just dust blowing in and getting into the house that way. So inhalation, as we know, sometimes pesticides can get into the air, so you're breathing them, but also dust from when the wind kicks up soil, and you can inhale it that way. The other way is through the skin, dermal. We call that dermal exposure, because some chemicals actually don't even need to get into your body through your nose or your mouth. They can go right through your skin. And the final little diagram of all the way on the right, what that's showing is that the reason I circled the child is that children are not only more sensitive to exposure to pesticides, they're more susceptible too. So they're more sensitive because when they're exposed, their bodies are growing and developing. And so they are more sensitive to potential harmful health effects. They're more susceptible because of their behavior. Kids play more on the ground. They put things in their hand, in their mouths more. They have a lot more hand-to-mouth contact than adults do. So that makes them more susceptible. So the emphasis on some commonly used lawn and garden herbicides. I had heard from Laura that you all were particularly interested in lawn and garden herbicides. So the picture I included is really from, you know, a big box lawn and garden store where a lot of these chemicals can be purchased. Some are more restricted and have regulations from the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection that restrict their use to just people who are certified to apply them. But there are many, many, many chemicals that you can just buy on the shelf in any lawn and garden store. So some of the chemical names you may or may not have heard of, these are all herbicides: dicamba, glyphosate, 2,4-D, dithiopyr, proadiamamin, MCPP, atrazine. And I listed some of the sort of brand name products that some of these are in that you may or may not have heard of. Probably most everybody's heard of Roundup, because it's very, very, very commonly used for weed control. But there are other things like MCPP that are in like so many different brands of weed and feed, just lawn fertilizers. So those are some names you might come across. I wanted to include some insecticides too, because these are not great either. Malathion for insect control in fruit trees, and some people will even use it for pests in their garden vegetables. Permethrin, this is primarily more for like mosquito tick control. Carbaryl is in a lot of grub control products that people put on their lawns. And bifenthrin is a sort of a termite plant insect, common one. So we've talked about exposure, how these chemicals can get into the body and how they can spread around the environment. But why are we concerned? So they're environmental concerns. These chemicals are you know, being used to kill something undesirable, but they're not necessarily focused on just that one thing that you want to get rid of. So there can be many beneficial insects, like especially bees, that can be harmed by the toxicity from some of these chemicals. Same with wildlife. We know rainwater can leach some of these chemicals into the soil. So you can have toxicity to beneficial soil organisms like earthworms that you need to keep soil healthy. The runoff getting into waterways can be toxic to fish and other aquatic organisms. It can also be toxic to the plants, which then impacts the organisms that need the plants. We talked about groundwater. If you're using groundwater for drinking water, some of these chemicals can get into groundwater. Many do not. Many just like to stick to the soil and they don't get into groundwater. Fertilizers are a big deal because if you've got these synthetic fertilizers with a lot of phosphate that are phosphorus, it can cause algal blooms, and this depletes oxygen, and this causes havoc in our waterways. And over time, using a lot of lawn and garden chemicals can actually make your lawn, it's counterintuitive, it can make it less healthy because you're damaging a lot of the beneficial stuff that goes on in healthy soil, healthy plants, and then you can get into sort of this vicious cycle where the health of your lawn isn't great, so you just need more chemicals to make it more healthy, and it's just a vicious cycle. I wanted to mention pets because it's a question we get a lot, and we really can't often answer the questions because there is not a lot of chemicals that are well studied in pets. So the exposure, we know that pets would be exposed more because they're on the ground, they're eating things on the ground. So they're definitely exposed more, but we really don't know about effects, the health risks that they may experience from exposure to these chemicals. So that's important to mention. There also can be a vehicle for bringing residues into the house because they bring in stuff on their fur and soil on their feet, et cetera. As anyone who has a pet knows, there's a lot of dirt from the outside gets inside when you have a dog or a cat even that goes outside. So for people, this is what you know, many people are particularly concerned about and ask a lot about. Why are we concerned about exposure to some lawn and garden chemicals for people? So this one slide could be, you know, a multi-hour lecture because, you know, there are very, very big differences between, you know, one chemical and another chemical in terms of how toxic it might be. And what are the specific things we may be concerned about with exposure? Fortunately, the really, really bad actors in terms of pesticides, the organochlorine, highly bioaccumulative things have been banned. So I'm talking about things like your DDT and your chlordane and your dieldrin. You know, those are not used anymore. They're still in the environment because they're so highly bioaccumulative, but you can't go out and buy those things and use them anymore. But really the big question mark is the toxicity of many lawn and garden chemicals are just not as well studied as we'd like. So we know a lot, but we don't know as much as we'd like to know. We have national biomonitoring data. There are national initiatives that measure blood and urine in volunteers to get a handle of what are our bodies accumulating in terms of chemicals. So we know from that biomonitoring data, that surveillance data, that we all have measurable levels of many, many pesticides in our bodies. So some chemicals, we have a possible concern for cancer risks, not all, but some. We know mainly from studies of pesticide workers and people who work in manufacturing of lawn and garden chemicals that very high levels of exposure to some chemicals can harm various systems in the body, immune system, nervous system, liver, reproductive system. And it really depends on what chemical we're talking about, what the exposure is. Some are less toxic, some are more toxic, but there, I would venture to say there are none that are non-toxic. They just aren't. Fertilizers are a big deal for human health because they have this, you know, huge burst of nitrogen that they put into your lawn or garden or wherever you're using it. And that nitrogen is super water soluble and it just goes right into the groundwater. And when you've got a lot of extra nitrogen, it naturally gets converted or broken down into nitrates and nitrates, which can be very harmful if you're drinking the groundwater. So that's a big issue that we worry about. And we recommend that anyone with a well that has well water, that they test their well water annually for nitrate and nitrates. Because so many people use fertilizers, synthetic fertilizers, and there's so much of it just getting washed away and getting into groundwater. So moving to alternatives. So the, you know, kind of number one recommendation, and I do have my last slide is a slide of all different resources to get more information. So testing your soil for potential nutrient deficiencies is really important because it gives you information that you can use to know what your soil needs and what it doesn't need. So there are places where you can, UConn is one where the UConn Soil and Nutrient Laboratory does this testing and the Agricultural Experiment Station does this testing. And I have links at the end. So another suggestion is, plant what's right for where you live. If you buy your plants and your seeds at a national big box store, they're going to stock things that work for everywhere, all over the nation. So your better bet is to go to a more local garden store where they're going to be more tailored towards plants and seeds that grow well in our climate. Mowing smart is another good one. You don't mow your grass right down to, really short. You leave it 3 inches or so using a sharp blade, leaving the clippings behind. This just allows your grass to be more healthy and therefore you need less chemicals. Fertilizer, organic only, no synthetics. Organic fertilizer is going to give the nutrients in a slower release, not a big burst. And really only in the fall, if needed, based on your soil test. Controlling grubs and other pests can be done naturally. There's a lot of options. There are these beneficial nematodes, there's milky spore, compost tea. There's like lots of links and information where you can get that kind of stuff. And if you need to go professional lawn care, there are ones out there that are organic. And the key is nothing synthetic. No synthetic pesticides or fertilizers. Organic, you have to be careful because sometimes people use the word organic and it's, when you read the fine print, it's not really that. So what are some of the benefits? Obviously, if you and your neighbors are not using as many of these chemicals, then everybody's going to have reduced exposure and risks to the environment, to pets and people. And you're really going to have, in the end, healthier lawns and gardens than you will with all the chemicals added. So really kind of my bottom line is number one, and this works for me, is if everybody just could adjust their expectation of what a lawn is supposed to look like, then you really get away from this ideal that you think you need to have a completely green, all grass, lush sort of carpet with nothing else but green grass. And you can really have a nice looking yard without using lots of chemicals. And there's so much information on the web about different types of grasses, using, you know, leaving some longer and some shorter. And I just, you know, in 5 minutes, I just pulled a few pictures off the internet of, you know, some different ways that a lawn can use that doesn't look like the picture on the brochure of ChemLawn. Soil and plants are going to be healthier, and people in the environment are going to be healthier. Those are kind of my bottom lines. And these are resources that I pulled together that I thought were the most informative and useful. I loved the Northeast Organic Farming Association had some really good information about how to find a professional who truly is organic and a deep energy and environmental protection. They have a great website that actually gives you tips about questions to ask lawn care professionals to make sure that they are truly, truly organic. And then there's about individual chemicals. There's lots of National Pesticide Information Center has some great fact sheets on individual chemicals. So does the ATSDR, which is the Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry, if there's a particular chemical. And we also field questions from the public about, you know, my exterminator wants to use this chemical inside my house. What is it? Is it harmful? Should we let them use it? My lawn care company wants to use this chemical. What is it? What do you know about it? So we do get questions like that from the public, and we're happy if you have like a brochure or the name of a chemical that somebody wants to use, we will research it and give information on a, you know, chemical specific basis to people. And that's it. That's all I had. I was going to put a question slide, but I guess I didn't.
Yeah. It's okay. Thank you so much, Meg. I already learned some things. I hope everybody else did too, about different kinds of pesticides I didn't even realize were pesticides, but I know we've been exposed to some of them. So let's ask for questions. Does anybody have a question?
Well, Debbie put one in the chat, and that was whether the slideshow, whether we could have access to the slideshow.
Yes, I'll send it out with next month's meeting notice, so you'll have it. And I'll try and put it on the city website with all of our past stuff. So
I could put it on the
site. Great, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay. And you have the emails of all the new people that joined us?
I have most of them.
Okay.
If you did not get a meeting notice by email about this meeting, why don't you send a private message to me in the chat box? And if you want to be added to the Environmental Advisory Council email meeting notice list, and then I'll know to add you, but I can usually find people. So thank you for asking that. So okay.
Well,
go ahead, Kathy.
Oh, I just wanted to thank you for addressing the fact that not everything that's organic is safe. And so you mentioned I can't pronounce any of it. Pyrethrin, I think that's organic. And, you know, or too much chicken manure is a ton of nitrogen going into the ground. So I really appreciate that, even though, you know, we're focusing on the chemicals, that even the organic ones are not necessarily safe. So thank you for that. Right.
Yeah, and the issue with the fertilizer really is that you really want to know what the soil needs, and you can't know that unless you do a nutrient test. So if you don't know what the soil is deficient in, then you're probably going to be applying more stuff than it needs and stuff that it doesn't need at all, that it's not even deficient in. Yep.
Thank you so much, Meg. That was so useful, interesting, and informative. I too learned a lot. I live in a house where I'm surrounded by neighbors who dump a lot of these very chemicals on their lawns. And this has been a big campaign. Laura's done such a great job as the as the block watch captain to try to inform neighbors, but they're addicted to these chemicals. And I just wonder if you have any advice. I mean, it's really hard. I really like my neighbors, but they also really like these chemicals.
Yeah, it's such a tough one because I think for a lot of people, there is just this this feeling or that they have to have a lawn that looks a certain way. And they think the only way they can get the lawn to look that certain way with not a single weed or dandelion or piece of clover or whatever it might be, that's undesirable. So for me, it's almost, it's really just sort of changing the expectation of what a lawn is supposed to look like. Or just really impressing upon people that these chemicals are not benign. They're no matter what the company says, you know, they're not benign, and they're not staying just where you apply them. They're having larger impacts to our environment, and they're just not necessary to have a nice looking lawn.
But there's a question from Anstris in the chat.
Yeah, I see it. One second. I just want to say that the people on Jeannie and I live on the same block, and the people on our block who use those pesticides or have lawn care professionals who apply them have the worst lawns on the whole block. And I mean, even years ago, there was an article in the New York Times about some farmer who regretted using glyphosate because eventually the soil got so hard because the glyphosate killed every last living organism in his soil that his plants had shriveled roots and it was a mess. So, yeah, I think, so the Environmental Advisory Council a couple of years ago wrote a draft letter we could use to send to neighbors who apply pesticides and remind them that these things are dangerous. I think what we will do is attach a copy of your slide presentation, if that's okay with you, Meg, and send our letter. I have a list of, I think, at least 50 addresses in our area of New Haven that applied lawn chemicals last year. And yeah, it's not good. Anyway, well, I have a couple of questions, but let's go to Anstris's. She says, DDT still persists in the environment. How long will DDT and other pesticides persist? What is the current thinking on the insect apocalypse and continued use of and persistent pesticide use?
Well, yeah, DDT is still in the environment because it was so seriously bioaccumulative. And so fortunately, the pesticides that have that kind of mechanism where they just don't break down and they build up in the food chain, we have stopped using those really bad actors. But it doesn't mean that what is still being used is, you know, totally benign and non-toxic. But yeah, the good news is that it's, you know, we're not continuing to put those really bad actor chemicals into the environment, but the bad news is there's, you know, they're still in the environment just because they persist. But the levels that are measured in people's bodies of these, some of these really long lasting ones, that those levels have decreased drastically over the generation. So that's, you know, that's good news. And we see that with other chemicals as well. Lead, when lead was banned from gasoline and reduced and then eventually eliminated in paint, we see the blood lead levels, same thing. They're just going down over a generation. So it's good news and bad news, I guess.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a couple of questions. Does the state health department have any lawn signs we could distribute to people for their organic lawns?
That's a good question. You know, we do not, because the real prevention, chemical pollution prevention folks are at DEEP, Department of Energy Environmental Protection. Unfortunately, their pollution prevention, they call it P2, that staff has just dwindled. The whole program, they used to do so much more education and outreach than they do now. So I can find out whether they can suggest any resources to get signage like that, but I don't know.
Okay, because you had a really nice sign in your presentation. Is that yours?
I found that just pictures on the internet. So unfortunately, it wasn't from anything that I've seen around. Although I did like it, and I thought I would buy one of those for my own yard.
Yeah,
if somebody was selling them, but yeah, I will ask.
Thank you. Okay, well, I know the Environmental Advisory Council discussed printing our own to send out, and I looked online and noticed that it was someplace in Maine or Vermont that had their town had them, so we could consider doing it. The thing is, we don't really have a production facility to laminate the signs or something, but I know the public library has a space where maybe they do stuff like that. We can see if they'll help us. So my other question is, does the state health department communicate with the lawn care professionals like ChemLawn, which is now True Green, and TLC, the lawn company, and people like that? Do you communicate with them or not?
We do not. That activity would fall more in sort of the pollution prevention arena. That's more DEEP's wheelhouse than ours. So okay. we have historically not.
Okay. So even because the pesticides they're spraying are not illegal, would it do us any good to file a complaint with the state attorney general about their having sprayed all this stuff on us in the middle of a pandemic? And causing a public health hazard, because every time I walked out my door for about 9 months, I smelled all this stuff. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I'm not sure.
Okay.
I'm really not sure how much impact that would have. The real way of getting at this is, I think, sort of two-pronged. One is sort of the marketplace, where if you have more consumers who are choosing lawn care companies that are totally organic, then that naturally is, you know, the companies that use the chemicals are not going to be getting as much business, and that's going to have market impacts. The other prong is through local legislators introducing legislation and bills to strengthen regulations. So I know, you know, there was at least one bill this session of, I think about that I'm aware of about sort of improving the transparency with, you know, notification of, you know, abutters and things like that. So that's sort of another way of getting at it. But yeah, the reality is that it's totally legal for these chemicals to be used by these companies. They are following the rules. They are using registered pesticides. They are certified by the state. They are following the laws.
Can I ask a follow-up question? Has there been a study of the cost of the public health impacts of these chemicals? And also a study, I mean, because it's the same government that's paying for the public health effects, and also has there been a study of the cost of the environmental effects? You know, when these things are, you know, when we're paying people to try and save our pollinators, and at the same time we're allowing the pollinators to be killed by these chemicals.
So I can't speak to studies on environmental impacts. I just don't know the state of that science. I know for human impacts, you know, there are studies, there are lots of studies in people. It's mostly the people who are applying pesticides because they're getting more exposure, or people working in the factories manufacturing. And that's because it is so very difficult to study in the general population effects from exposure to things like pesticides, because there are so many different ways that people are exposed. And it's not like the impact, it's not like the effect is singular, that if you see that effect, you know it was because of exposure to chemical X. Mm-hmm. There are so many different things in our lives that we're exposed to that can cause some of the effects that we know are associated with some of these pesticides, that to be able to sort out and discern what was really the cause of these effects it's nearly impossible in the general public. It's nearly impossible to.
So that means the dollar amount can't be placed on it?
It makes it very difficult, yes, to put a dollar amount on health effects that could be caused. That is correct. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to work to educate people and get less of these chemicals used in the environment. Just because we can't say this number of cancers or this number of immune effects or this number of reproductive effects were caused. And that's true for a lot of exposure to environmental toxins. We're still cleaning up waste sites, even though we can't prove that any exposure to those chemicals from those hazardous waste sites actually caused any harm to people. Fortunately, we don't have to make that proof. We have regulations that say, you got to clean it up to this level. You don't need to wait to find the sick people in order to make that cleanup happen.
Okay, so two things. One, those professional lawn companies are not always obeying the law, because they spray even in high wind conditions contrary to label directions, which is very disturbing. And even when I see pesticide people about it, they don't do anything. They say, oh, they call the companies and say, don't do that again. But, you know, that is not okay. There was a True Green truck around the corner from my house on the day of Hurricane Yes. Now, I don't care what those people were doing that day, but the winds were far too high for anyone to be applying pesticide that day. That those companies should have known enough to have their people not come out that day. And I don't know. It is very distressing to me that we, and I know our resources to get our legislators to pass laws, we're working on that. So anyway, and then there's a question from Karen Schnitzer in the chat. So if you want to comment about the high wind thing, Meg, that's fine. And if you don't, that's fine.
Yeah, I know. And, it's a really tough one because it's one of those things like dust and odors where, you know, it's not happening for long periods of time where you could call someone and say, come out and take a look. It's like they do it and it's done. And, you know, you can take pictures, you can document, but the sad reality is that the deep pesticides unit do not have the resources to follow up on these kinds of complaints. I would say that's not a reason to not continue to make to lodge the complaints, because oftentimes a continuing squeaky wheel will eventually get the grease. But the reality is their resources are such that they can't respond. I don't know what local health departments, whether they would have the ability to help document and make a case. You're saying no. So it sounds like you've already tried that avenue.
Yeah. Do you see anybody from the health department here? They're not here. I call them on a regular basis.
Yep.
But yes, I will keep calling people and keep asking people for help. We won't give up. We'll just eventually hope that the word will get out and that this whole thing with Monsanto and the $10 billion settlement agreement that's never ending will stay in the news. And that now that a reporter has published a book about the Monsanto falsified data, there are several documentaries about it. Hopefully that will help. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, education,
anyway,
yeah.
So Karen Schnitzer.
I was just going to say education and outreach, giving people alternatives can go a long way. You know, organic lawn care is not more expensive than synthetic chemical base. It's just not.
Right.
So, you know, giving people some alternatives if they really need help from a company to do their lawn care, that can go a long way.
Yes, we had Dan Delventhal of Mow Green come and talk to us in the spring about better lawn care, and he made some very good points. And
yeah, so that's a good, yep, that's a good avenue too.
Yeah, okay, so now let's go to Karen Schnitzer's question, which isn't 2,4-D DDT or related. I think it's not, right? It's half of Agent Orange, as I recall.
That's what I meant. Agent Orange. Brain's just not as nimble as it used to be. So 2,4-D, okay. Agent 4D. Orange, defoliant, not a good chemical. And this triplet that contains the 2,4-D, Mecoprop, and Dicamba, which I have read very bad things about. And I live in a condo. I don't have a lot of power. I have this much. I have a little bit. And so I would say once upon a time, we used to have True Green as a vendor. They were here often. Our current vendor happily doesn't come as often. But they use this triplet that contains these three substances that I don't believe are good for people. That's all. Just kind of saying that can't be good for us. But yes, we have people who really want their green, weed-free lawn, and they have more say than I do. And then we have two streams that cross the property, and I worry that when they apply these chemicals and our, let's see, that's the herbicide, so of course we must have some pesticides of some sort when they apply these things.
So you're saying this is an associate like a condo association?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, I would just encourage you to continue to advocate for them changing that practice, and, you know, give them the information from some of the resources from my slides. Try the financial route. You know, it won't be more expensive, and it probably will be less expensive because, you know, the soil is probably in a vicious cycle where it's not healthy because of all the chemicals. So then you need more chemicals, and you never get out of that.
Thank you.
Yeah, this is Lynn. I live in the condo also, and we actually garnered some support from people that had cats because the cats were getting sick. And we initiated a petition to the board to decrease the amount of chemicals they were using with the lawn care companies. And they did cut back. It was so strong, you could smell it, you know, for days after they applied it. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that worked a little bit. And there's also the deep registry, which requires them to notice you when they're going to apply these chemicals. And it's kind of a nuisance for them to do it. But lately they've tried to say, oh, well, we don't have to notify the individuals. We just have to notify the board, you know. But I said, no. So they do, for the most part, notify me. But there's not beyond that much you can do.
Those are two really good suggestions, though.
We are we are notified. They may notify the board, and I always go back to the management company and say, "Hey, you know," or if I find out that so and so is coming to apply these pesticides or substances, I say, "Make sure you send an email out to everyone, because everyone needs to know. We have people that walk their dogs. They need to know. People who walk on the street, they need to know." We had a substance, and I don't remember which one it was. It was merit. We had merit, or we had something else, or we had something that had merit in it. Forgive me for not remembering, but it was little pellets or crystals. And they would spread this on the lawn, and I would go outside and find it on the sides of our streets. And I complained because it shouldn't be there. You know, best practice is they should sweep it back into the grass or sweep it up. It doesn't belong on the street. And of course, it would be near the stormwater drain, so that if it were going to rain, it would wash away to where it doesn't belong. And so as I complained, they said, all right, we'll switch it over to the liquid equivalent, same thing, but liquid. And I wasn't sure that was a good idea either. I was not being a professional. I don't know. I've hoped that if it's applied and it's a liquid, it stays where it is. But then I felt kind of like I won't know when they're putting it on the street again, because I'm sure they're still not going to be careful. And once again, we have the two streams that go through the property. And so I keep trying to tell them, you know, you have to leave buffer. You can't apply this right next to the stream. It should be X many feet or so many feet. But the law, from what I understand, is very vague. Like, work it out what you think is appropriate. It doesn't say 25 feet.
Yeah.
From the stream. So I feel like we're just not getting enough help to protect the environment. Hi, Kitty. You know? So yeah.
Thanks, Karen. So Iris has a question, Meg, after you're done answering Karen's concern.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that particular brand name, but I can certainly look it up and see what are the chemicals that are in there. You're right that it doesn't it liquid versus those granules. It it's still going to run off if there's too much of it on the soil, and if it rains right afterwards, it doesn't necessarily mean it's a safer, better application if it's liquid versus granules. Doesn't necessarily.
So Merit is grub control, by the way, and there is a law against getting those little granules on the sidewalk, because Jeannie, my neighbor who's here, contacted Deep when they were left on our sidewalk, and Deep contacted the people who did it, I think, and told them they shouldn't be doing that. Anyway, on to Iris.
Yeah, I don't really have a question. I just wanted to thank Meg for clarifying the different terminology. I have a comment. I know that, for example, atrazine was banned in about 30 countries over 10 years ago, or maybe 20, and including Switzerland. I think they're where the company produces, the current company is producing, and including what I heard in a lecture years ago, Angola, that was in a civil war for years. So they banned it. I'm just wondering if they're, I guess it's just frustrating that we have to do it at a city level, and it's not done at a national level, and professionals at DEEP and DPH, they know of this. So, you know, I just guess the frustration that it's not, that the word is not coming out fast enough. And we could do our work with our neighbors and ask them one at a time, please don't use it. And I don't feel that we've been very successful. I'm just asking if New York or Massachusetts, if there are some products that they banned that we should adopt them. Should we look at what has been banned in our local states?
I mean, that's one, that's one way, if you sort of want to go that route to, pick certain, certain chemicals, the difficulty is that it's sometimes really hard to know in terms of, commercial lawn and garden, what are all the different products out there that are being used? Because there are literally hundreds and hundreds of lawn and garden chemicals that are allowed, that are on the DEEP list, that are certified, registered, that can be used on residential property. And other ones that maybe are banned for residential property, but can be used in other areas, like on golf courses, maybe, or on commercial property, or, in orchards or agriculture. So there's so many different chemicals, and there's so many different places that they're allowed or not allowed to be used. It's hard to do like a chemical by chemical approach. I agree with you. It's frustrating. It's, the federal government, the EPA and the FDA, USDA, like, we move slowly. That's just the reality. We move slowly. And, sometimes the European Union is way ahead of us. Sometimes other countries are way ahead of us. But you really have to accumulate a pretty strong evidence base before you can start restricting use and then all out banning use of a chemical. And that takes time, because it's difficult to study. It's difficult to accumulate that evidence base. Okay. And there are always forces pushing against. So, like a good example is chlorpyrifos. It's an organophosphate insecticide, and it's banned for residential use. You can't use it on any residential property, but It's still used on golf courses, and it's really the only option for farmers who are farming tobacco and some orchard fruits. Mm-hmm. It is the only thing that kills certain pests. So the economic impact of banning that completely would be enormous for these segments of farmers. So that is literally the reason why it's not banned in Connecticut. Golf courses, that's easy. There are other options. So it probably should be banned for use on golf courses. But that's just like one example of there's lots of pressures pushing back against doing complete bans. Strong financial pressures.
Yeah. Thank you for explaining that. Yeah. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah. Thank you.
Yep. I'm sorry I jumped in, but it seems silly because these chemicals are not criminal suspects. So, you know, it seems like we treat them all as innocent until proven guilty. They're chemicals. That's
exactly the problem. Yes. The whole way we regulate chemicals in consumer products and packaging, everything is innocent until proven otherwise. So you really, like, there are thousands of new chemicals introduced into the marketplace, like every year, with very minimal study, and we wait and to see what happens. That's the way our laws are set up, and it's crazy. That's the way they're set up. It's truly that. It's innocent until proven guilty.
I would argue that even the ones that have been proven guilty are still around.
Yes, there are
a lot of them.
That as well. There are examples of that as well.
Yes. And I would suggest that it would be better to ban the chemicals with exceptions and have people apply for an exception instead of, you know, letting things go the way they are and letting us all be exposed to things, because the biggest property owners in New Haven, which are Yale University and the Yale Hospital, spray a large amount of pesticides all over us without notifying us, without any say on our part, and we just suffer the consequences, and it's really unfortunate. And they even use pesticides on their artificial turf, which is really crazy. But
yeah,
artificial turf manufacturers recommend that.
Yes, there are disinfectants and there are herbicides that are recommended for use, because I guess little weeds can grow up in the sand and gravel and stuff. And yep, I am aware of that. I am not sure. I'm not knowledgeable on what specific herbicides are typically being used, or the disinfectants for that matter. But I am aware of that, yes.
Yeah. Well, I hope that we can do something toward getting rid of these. Our Congresswoman Rosa DeLauro introduced a bill in Congress a couple of years ago, glyphosate out of our food. And I think that is a good start for someone in Congress, after Senator Murphy told us we had to start locally. So we did. We got a ban on lawn and garden chemicals in New Haven, or at least, and I know it's not enforceable, but I want to keep getting the word out anyway. Yep.
And it's a great, it's a great sort of idea and initiative to really try to get more education, in the hands of people, particularly ones who are using the companies. Yep.
Okay. Any more questions or comments from anybody?
Just a brief comment. I think Save the Sound is about to offer a series of educational webinars that at least one of them covers this topic. And I know Southwest Conservation District and Neighborhood Housing Services have been talking about doing a project where we're disseminating each other's information and other resources information around, at least around residential best practices for this and for stormwater and for a number of residential best practices. So I don't know, just it's nice to know that you're there, Meg. I think I've seen you on a GC3 conference call or something.
Possibly, yes. I have been in on one or two of those. Yes. Yeah. Yep.
So. Okay. Well, thank you, Meg. Anybody else have anything else, any more input about this topic? Okay. Well, we're going to keep in touch with you, and if you find some nice signs, we could, I don't know, distribute, sell, whatever. We'll consider that. And in the meantime, we will try and make our own if we can do that. But I love the sign you found. I thought it was fabulous. And thank you for putting together this slideshow for us. Thank you for spending your time with us. Thank you for everything you do to try and protect us from all these things. And thank you for teaching us so many new things this evening.
You're very welcome. And we'll stay in touch.
Okay, fantastic. Right. And you can call upon us anytime you need people to advocate against toxins. We're here. We like good, doing that.
Good to know. Good to know.
Yeah.
All right.
You. Okay.
Thank you. Oh. Everybody have a good night.
Thank you. You too. Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, so let's see, what else do we have? So I noticed that Kevin McCarthy joined us after the presentation started, and so did Chris Isaac, and I think Chris is gone now. Are you still? Yeah. Oh, Chris is here. Anyway, so Chris, before you got on, we discussed the fact that we will discuss energy at our April meeting. We will try and get answers to all of Aaron's questions for next month, and then we will try and convince someone from UI perhaps to come and join us, and we will also get someone from PSEG to join us to discuss Lynn Bonnet's questions, because we want everyone to be as knowledgeable as possible. So I hope that works for you.
Of course.
And, let's see.
Keep up the good work.
Good. Mm-hmm. Thanks. So I know I sent in the agenda and the information about the IREJN webinar tomorrow on the state environmental legislation. So if anybody needs the information about that, you can go to their website or you can get it from our agenda. And the next Mill River Watershed Urban Waters Initiative meeting, as I noted, was changed to March 16th. And yes, Aaron, Yale does use pesticides on their artificial turf. And the next Connecticut Water Planning Council Water Rates Workshop, or as we said, is March 16th to 17th, 9 through noon. And Iris has all the information about that if you need more information.
Yeah, if you want to register, then you'll get the materials. And they're flexible, you could register like a day before, but if you want to get the materials or hop onto part of it. So it's 2 half days, they try to make it easy.
Thank you. And and Aaron says the Rock to Rock launch party is this Saturday, March the 6th at the Learning Corridor in New Hallville. And there, the Connecticut League of Conservation Voters is sponsoring an event for World Water Day, which is March 22nd. Entitled a virtual event, of course, What Water Means to Me. So you can sign up for that. I didn't have the information for signing up yet, but you can go to their website and then hopefully at some point they will have the information there. Let's see what else is going on here. Oh, so materials management. Dawn, I saw this ad in the New York Times yesterday. That Staten Island has a recycled paper plant. And I'm wondering if we could get one of those in New Haven, because we could serve all of New England, you know, and it would be green jobs. And anyway, it's just a thought. The company that owns it is called Pratt. And I can give you the information about that if you want. Floristine and I would like that to happen.
Okay. Where's Pierre?
Right. Pierre, too.
Lots of work, but I'm really interested.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think, you know, so Pierre is not the one who does like economic development for New Haven, but anything to do with a private entity coming in here. But anyway, just a thought. The Monsanto Roundup settlement, which is always getting postponed and postponed and postponed. Monsanto has just had a bunch of lawyers complain about the plan to put $2 billion aside for future claimants. They say it's not enough. So of course this will hold everything up. And I've had no response yet to my query to DEEP about the meeting DEEP and Capital for Change held to discuss the results of the water and soil testing they did at houses in Upper Westville. I have asked and not been answered. And I'm wondering if the city shouldn't ask. Edith Pastana suggested that perhaps the information might not be available to the public. So I asked her if it would be available for Giovanni Zinn, and we shall see. But I think somebody at the city level should be able to know what's in the soil and water at those houses, especially since they put one backhoe in, took out one shovel full of soil and came up with water in somebody's yard. That's a little bit disturbing in Upper Westville. And
Laura, just FYI, this evening, shortly before this meeting, I think Doris Johnson from DEEP was trying to get a hold of you. They're trying to figure, did you see that about the soil and water testing?
I saw it.
Okay.
Yvonne Bolton knows about it. It was Lee Sawyer was taking care of it, but unfortunately he passed away. And this has been an ongoing project that was delayed a whole year by the pandemic. The tests were supposed to happen early last year and did not. And so anyway, the homeowners want to know what it is that's causing the problems with their houses, why their houses are sinking, why their basements are full of water, etc. Let's see. So I know you all are keeping track of the legislative session and all the hearings. I hope you're all submitting testimony about the bills you like to whichever committees you like. It's just impossible to keep track of all of them. But if somebody has something you want the Environmental Advisory Council to submit testimony in support of, we will be happy to do that.
Oh, good. There's a few of them. And I,
okay.
And unfortunately, the meetings are concurrent tomorrow, but I can get you a draft written testimony. I mean, there's more than a couple, but there's a couple specifically about energy and housing that I would like to draw to our attention.
Right. So we would just send a general, we support this bill. If we will trust you, Kathy, you can send us all the specifics, but we would not send specifics because we're not the knowledgeable one you are.
And if you want to do that. I think the transportation one already happened. That I don't know if Doug is on top of that one, but I think that was yesterday.
Yeah, that got voted out. But there's another one coming up, I believe, for electric vehicle rebates, and there's a group trying to get the bill amended to include electric bicycle rebates at the state level as well. I'll try and share that with Dawn, who can share it with the rest.
Thank you. Okay. Yeah, and so just so you know, with the electric vehicle issue, so there's an EV bill, but it's an environmental justice issue because a lot of folks don't buy new vehicles in the first place, but they might buy an electric bike because, you know, they might buy that new.
Okay. Well, I just, here's Dawn's son who's come to run the rest of the meeting. Yay. Always happy to see our favorite junior member. I just want to go on record as saying that, you know, unless we figure out the problem with the batteries and everything concerning the batteries in these electric vehicles, we are not advocating for the absolute best thing. So I want us to make sure that, you know, we still understand that no tailpipe doesn't mean no emissions, as they wrote in the New York Times today. And we need to be cognizant that we need to make the technology advance so that it does mean everything.
Yeah, I'm not advocating for electric vehicles. I'm advocating for electric bicycles.
Got it.
Yep.
Okay.
Or not.
Okay. Great. Thanks, Doug. Thank you, Iris. Okay. Let's see. So I think the last thing, if anybody who didn't see it already wants to see the update we gave to CSEP last month, the night after our meeting, I can put the link in the chat box. And the other new business we have is the Gateway Terminal Rolled Salt Depository is doing double duty after the one in New London closed. And Dawn, who do we take this up with, because it is worrying people like Aaron Good that trucks are sitting idling at the salt depository.
I'll have to think about that. I'm not
okay.
Sure.
I have the answer.
Good. Good.
Without a local ordinance banning idling, the only person in the state of Connecticut that can enforce idling is DEEP.
Okay, well, so I took the idling enforcement up with DEEP, and they said they can't possibly enforce idling everywhere and that citizens could do it themselves.
My apologies, Madam Chair. My recommendation is not to talk to DEEP. My recommendation is to make a local idling ordinance that parking enforcement can enforce.
They don't want to. I think I talked to them, but okay.
Who's they? We are in charge of our laws.
Okay.
DEEP is not in charge of local laws.
Okay. Great. If you draft one, we'll support it.
I don't know if Doug can draft it. Can you? Are you allowed to? Or do we?
No, I'm not allowed to do that sort of work without residents have to take the lead on that. But I can advise, like I'm advising the leaf blowing resolution.
Okay. Well, I think Chris Schweitzer submitted all the information to you, including perhaps a resolution that he had his interns draft, I believe. Is that correct?
To me, I have no idea.
Remember submitting it to you, and I think nothing came of it, but I will submit all the information.
Yes, because I don't pass the laws, Madam Chair. So to submit it, you'd have to submit it to the Board of Alders to pass a law or get the mayor's staff to do so.
Right. But I guess the idea was that we wanted someone who was knowledgeable about it to vet it. So
I think we discussed it. What I remember is we discussed it in the meeting and we discussed the enforcement issue. And I think it was never further edited to reflect that the parking enforcement could potentially take that on. And I think it just kind of didn't continue.
Okay.
I know that Doug and I talked about it and I thought I relayed that to the meeting. And then I never really heard about it again. So,
okay. Well, if somebody wants to take that on now, we can do it. I cannot take it on because I don't know enough about it. So if we have, yes, Karen?
Just a quick question. So is there, just to confirm from my head, an ordinance or a law, state law?
Yes. So there's a 3-minute limit on idling of vehicles.
Okay, then I would recommend that you reach out to the Conservation Law Foundation, CLF.
Yeah, we've dealt with them. I think they take up issues they want. But yeah.
I know that at this point in time, they are possibly working on some idling issues with other companies breaking the law.
Bus idling.
Yes.
Okay. Well, if somebody on the Environmental Advisory Council wants to confer with CLF about that, anybody volunteer? Okay. Well, maybe.
Sorry, it's legislative.
See, what?
It's because of the point in time, I think we're all just burned out. That's why nobody's volunteering.
Okay, well, yeah, I don't know. Okay.
Aaron said he'll look into it further.
Great.
In the chat. And Aaron also pointed out a few other things in the chat about not just idling, but the Port Authority.
Yeah. Okay. Great. So thank you, Aaron. You don't have to be on the council to work on our issues. We don't have enough people to do everything because we're a very small council. We would be grateful if you feel like doing this. Somewhere in the emails back there, I have all the information Chris Schweitzer submitted about an anti-idling, and I can forward them to you if I didn't already. So thank you.
I just speak for myself. I will strongly support it. I just can't follow. I'm just out of time. I work too late every night. I just don't have any more time anymore.
Yeah.
But I'll support it.
Okay, great. Thank you, everybody, for your suggestions and for volunteering. Karen, how would you like to move to New Haven and help us?
No. I'll help you from here when I can, if you don't.
Okay, that's good.
Yeah, yeah. I have, Art, I will tell you that I am going to be talking to someone from CLF next week. I could give them somebody's name and say, call someone.
Well,
I don't know if that'll help.
Yeah, we kind of know them. So,
okay.
Yeah, they came and introduced themselves to us. So I think
if you're all set, you're all set.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just want to say thank you all for letting me sit in on this meeting and for listening to me, just like I was part of your meeting forever and your group. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. Okay. So thank you, everybody. And Dawn's gonna, whatever. Okay. So, well, I don't think an idling ordinance is going to be the ending of the road salt situation. The fact is that now there's only one road salt depository in the state of Connecticut, apparently. And so I don't know what else people would do. Even if they were sitting there with their motors turned off, we would still have all these trucks driving through New Haven to get road salt for their private businesses. And I don't know, Dawn, I don't know what the city can do about that, but we can think about it. We can
take all those rain barrels and fill them with salt and ship them out to the other municipalities and say, here, take it, keep it.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's all I have.
I shouldn't be joking. I don't know. You know, like, why is it that New Haven is always the dumping ground?
Yeah, yes, that is a good question. And we're working on things. Okay. So do you see Aaron just put a lot of stuff in the chat? He put articles about the road salt and the volume of trucks. And we'll save the chat for later. And yeah.
Could I make a comment?
Of course, Anstris. Sorry, yeah. I didn't see your hand.
Yeah. So one of the questions I have is who in New London operated the transfer station and how did it get shut down? You know,
The State Port Authority closed it because they want to do something else with it.
Okay. But so that actually I think that it means we should bring a complaint to the State Port Authority, because they have made a decision that is really irrational to have only one place in Connecticut with salt. I think maybe that's where we need to go with this. You know, things could be slightly better here if, let's say, we eventually get the train track built from the port and it gets connected into the rest of the rail system. A great deal of the salt could be moved by rail, you know, and if they make a connection to Bradley that uses a lot of the salt, then you could have a salt on a train. It goes all the way to Bradley even. But until then, I think it's fair to say it would just be, it's just completely irrational, even in terms of the amount of driving that trucks are doing. If you could have, let's say, half of the state once served by the New London port, and even half of it by New Haven. So I think it's a regional issue, and the state hasn't made a wise decision here. I guess when you say they wanted to do something else with the land, most of the land in these port authorities, unlike New York and New Jersey, is owned by private people. Under Robert Moses, when that port authority was created, all of the land was taken and is basically owned by the port authority and leased out. In Connecticut, it's still private owners. So there's, even if the port authority approves it, it's very likely that the actual owner of the land may have had another use that they preferred. And it could also be that Gateway Terminals wanted to have a monopoly on sand. So I think that there's I think there's deep questions here.
Yeah, you're right. And I'm hoping, Dawn, who in the city administration could answer questions for us about this road salt situation? Does it have to be the New Haven Port Authority director, or would it be someone who works directly for the city administration? Any idea?
I welcome Doug to help me answer this. I mean, Gateway's privately owned, right? So I'm not sure.
I think
role in the Port Authority or in their meeting?
Staffs it. Giovanni staffs it. I think Aaron's right.
Yeah.
We should invite the executive director of the Port Authority to come to a meeting.
Okay. Well, we had the last one before she retired. We will ask the director of the Port Authority to come meet with us in May, since next month we're going to discuss energy. So, okay. Thank you.
Just a reminder here. The salt pile land is outside the Port Authority district. It doesn't mean that.
Oh.
So if the state port authority made a decision in New London, in a way they are the people that have landed it on this land that actually should be within the port district, but isn't.
Okay, well, yeah, if it's not within the port district, then the port authority director is probably not going to be able to help us.
She might have some information, but it wouldn't be okay. Something that it would have come, I don't think, to them, except for how do you get the salt from the ships that dock at the hard port over to the site. It may have been by train. So it still would be good to know, just to hear what she knows about it.
Okay. All right. You know what? I'll reach out to her and see what she says, and see who she thinks might be able to help us. Maybe we need to invite the owner of the salt depository to come and talk to us at a meeting. What do you think of that idea?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Okay.
I don't know if Tom Dubno is still, he used to be the person that would do any public or political engagement for Gateway.
Oh, really? Tom Dubno?
Dubno, D-U-B-N-O.
Dubno, okay.
Dubno.
Okay. All right, I'll ask them. Is that okay, Dawn? Okay. What, Anstris?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. Fine. Okay. I think that's it. If anybody else has anything else that's pressing this evening, we can talk about it. Otherwise, we can adjourn until next month when it will be all energy. And Kathy, you'll get the information to us about the bills you want us to support.
But quick question about this all energy meeting. I mean, if UI is coming to talk,
well, they have not agreed to talk. They have agreed to answer questions. I will ask them if they will come. It's PSEG who agreed to come, even though they're getting out of the business and they thought they would be irrelevant. But if Lynn Bonnet wants them to answer questions, we will get them here and they can try and answer questions.
Gotcha. And so as far as a UI goes, I don't have any interest in having an energy meeting with them, but rather a cleanup meeting with them.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Yes. Okay. Yeah. Cleanup. Yes. A remediation meeting with them. But we don't. Yeah. Whatever. I doubt they will agree to come, but we can tell them we want a short discussion with them. So anyway. Okay. Thanks, Aaron. Thanks, everybody. And I'll email everybody later. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay, have a good night.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melissa.
Thanks, Laura.
Thanks, Laura. Bye, Jeannie. Bye, Kristen.
Bye.
Bye, Doug. Thank you. Bye, Kathy. Bye, Florestine again. Dawn, will you save the chat since I'm pathetic?